From SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, this is Coronavirus, everything you need to know now.
From Doctor Radio Reports, here's Dr. Mark Siegel.
We're still in it. We're still in the thick of it. We had over 76,000 new cases yesterday. Hospitalizations at right about 40,000, which is flat. We talked last week to Chris Carpenter about that, who's basically the head of infectious diseases, among many other hats, at Beaumont Hospital System, which is an incredible hospital system outside of Detroit, Oakland University Medical School. And he was basically indicating, without being able to give me the numbers on this yet, that hospitalizations in Michigan are up with younger patients than we were seeing before, because we've done a pretty good job protecting our elderly population now with the vaccine. But, you know, the variants that are out there, the B117 variant is really propagating in Michigan, along with the Brazilian variant that has appeared there and has appeared in Alaska and is all coursing across Canada now. They're much more rapidly spreading, contagious and more virulent. So we're seeing hospitalizations, but it sounds like, in fact, I know for sure that the death rates are down. Deaths from COVID in the United States yesterday were about 530, which is terrible, but down. So the case rates are up, the death rates are down, the hospitalization rates are stable, in the middle of which we're ramping up vaccines. And I think that the current administration is doing a great job with vaccine rollout right now, and has been for a while. We've been vaccinating about over 3 million people a day, shots in arms. We're up to somewhere between 20 to 25% of Americans in most states are fully vaccinated. We're well over 100 million doses that have been administered of the three vaccines that are approved. But, you know, if you look to Israel, you'll see, if you really want to have a major impact on the case numbers, you need a lot more than that. Israel, with about 60% of the population fully vaccinated, is now having an enormous drop-off of cases in the 300 range over the past 24 hours, with 8 deaths. Now, they're a much smaller country. They're 9 million people, but everything's wide open there now. And that brings up the first question, which is, what about vaccine passports? What can we use our vaccines for that will increase the incentive of their use? Jay, no offense, but that's probably the longest preamble I ever gave, but I'm going to leave the rest to you. Dr. Jay Wolfson is a doctor of public health and a JD, which you know is an attorney. He's a distinguished service professor in public health, medicine, and pharmacy, and senior associate dean at the Morsani College of Medicine, associate vice president of University of South Florida Health at the University of South Florida. He's on the faculty at Stetson University College of Law. He's a frequent guest on this show. I ask him a lot of things, but this one is about as much up his alley as ever, because this has legal issues involved. Now, Jay, here's where I want to start this and why I gave the preamble. I think that we're going to hit a wall, and obviously the president thinks so too, because he's now trying to move up the dates of when everyone in the country over the age of 16 can get the vaccine. He's saying maybe April 16th for that. It was May 1st before. He's doing that probably because he wants to keep the momentum going. But we're all worried about vaccine hesitancy and vaccine non-compliance rearing its ugly head. So why wouldn't incentivizing the vaccine help?
Well, it's hard to figure out how you incentivize vaccine in certain communities, Mark. You know, there are pockets of African-American rural and urban communities that are still hesitant because of their lack of trust for the government. There are still some Latino communities in urban areas that are reluctant because of their distrust. There are those portions of our entire population that still believe that the vaccine is some horrible plot to infect us with something else. And then there are still people this late in the day, even though it's only 3 months in, who are saying, you know something, it's only been out for about 3 months. I really want to be protected, but I want to wait until others have it first and then see what happens, because we don't know so much. So all of those things are part of the hesitancy. And we don't have in this country the capacity to say, everybody, you are getting vaccines tomorrow, otherwise there's going to be some kind of punishment. We are not as compliant as other countries are, nor are we as socially responsible as a collective. You and I have talked about that before.
By the way, Jay, I'm going to keep saying lawyer hat. So here's lawyer hat. Don't we not even have the legal right to superimpose anything mandatory with an emergency use authorization on this vaccines?
Theoretically, we do. It would have to come from a government entity like Congress, or perhaps the CDC or the FAA could do it for flying. I think they're already requiring testing, as do other countries. But to talk about some kind of a validation process or a verification process, first you have to have something that is valid. You've got to be able to have a centralized, digitized, valid source of information that is also de-identified and, you know, creates some privacy. And we don't have that yet. There are several that are in development by IBM and by Microsoft and some private companies. And until you have that, you can't mandate that people prove something that they don't have an ability to prove.
I actually, you jumped to the next question. Let's get back to that in a minute. I'm asking you whether you could mandate that anyone takes this vaccine if it's an emergency use authorization situation.
That's unclear. And that's being debated right now among attorneys within the EEOC, Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, within the FDA and the CDC. The emergency use authorization, as you know, is not a final licensing. The EAU is still, you know, kind of a it's part of the experiment. And until the vaccines are formally licensed and approved, it could be argued that they're really not validated. And you can't make me do anything that's not legally licensed. That's part of the argument. So we have to wait and see on that. And I think that's why the Biden administration is also sidestepping the mandatory idea of some kind of validation or verification of vaccination.
So now let's get back to that. I tend to look at it a different way, which is because I'm, you know, one of the reasons I brought you on the show today, obviously, is because the governor of Florida, who has done a lot of good things during the pandemic, but we don't agree with everything he does, is banning vaccine passports. But I'm wondering if there isn't some way, when I say incentivize, I'm not trying to be cute here. I think there's a lot of places where we use testing to validate something, like, you know, you want to go to this country, you got to get tested. You want to go to the baseball game, you got to get tested. But testing, we've spent too little time lately explaining that testing is very inadequate because it's not 100% accurate. Depends on what window you're in. By my estimation, looking at the science here, the vaccines are more reliable than any kind of testing. So how about saying anywhere where you might test to get in, you can use your vaccine instead? What do you think of that?
Well, I guess that would be an interesting substitute as a voluntary thing. Say, look, you can either get tested or you can prove it and we'll let you in. That creates less of a mandate. And the only way you're going to be able to prove that you had it is to show your CDC card at this point. You know, and there's that everybody who gets tested, who gets vaccine, gets that card. So making it voluntary and giving the alternative of being tested, which is perfectly legitimate, gives people the option, and both on the venue side and the individual side. You know, the Miami Heat last week said, we can't require that you do this, but anybody who shows us that they've been vaccinated, they're going to get a front row seat. We're going to get a whole section of the stadium dedicated just to those people who have been vaccinated, and that's going to be reserved for them. We're not denying access to anybody else. Everybody else can come in, but they can't sit there. So that's kind of an incentive as well, Mark.
But what do you actually feel about this, Jay? Tell me your own personal opinion about all this.
I have mixed feelings. Privacy is really important, and would it be the same as asking somebody, you know, show me that you're not pregnant. Show me that you're not using drugs before you can come in. Show me that you that you don't have cancer, or show me that you do have cancer so that I can give you some treat. It could be a slippery slope if we're not careful, and since we're still so early into this awful virus, we don't know if and how it's going to behave in the years or even the months ahead. So by doing something, we have passports. We have them now. Every school child in America pretty much has to demonstrate before they get enrolled in the 10th school that they have taken the proper vaccines. Every university in America requires that before you can attend classes, you give evidence of your immunization record. When you fly internationally, you have to give evidence of your immunization record. And now if you're flying to Europe, you have to have more than that. You're going to have an absolute verification that you've had the vaccine in some countries. So, and you have to show your ID before you can buy liquor if you're under 18 or if you look under 18. We have all kinds of passports now, but those are based on laws that have been passed either by municipal governments or state legislatures or the federal government. There is no law right now that has been created saying you have to demonstrate that you've taken the vaccine in order to do certain things, and then you'd have to have a legitimate way of being able to demonstrate that, which isn't quite here yet.
You know, I want to show you where I come in on this evolving science that we're discussing and see where you what your pushback is. When you talk about schools, I take a pause because unless the variants, I mean, right now, younger children don't get as sick from COVID. They don't get hospitalized. This is changing. As I said, you know, we're seeing more hospitalizations, younger people in Michigan. But, you know, Jen Leiter was on last week, one of our top infectious disease pediatric experts, and said point blank, she's not seeing sicker kids right now, even though we got a ton of variants here in New York. We got B117. We got the New York City got its own homegrown variant. I mean, you know, I would argue, when you talk schools, because you mentioned schools, maybe teachers should have to have a vaccine passport, but not schools yet. And I also wonder if it couldn't be seen as more of a driver's license type deal rather than a passport, because that's become like a, and once again another politicization. You know, it's a highly charged red hot word now, like masks were. I mean, we're talking about public health here, Jay. So we want to protect other people. So if you can prove that you're much less likely to be carrying this dreaded virus, you would think that it would mean that you would be less of a risk to society, which is the whole purpose of laws, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's certainly the whole purpose of public health laws. And you and I would be perfectly pleased to be able to show that we've got proof of a vaccine in order to go into a crowded venue so that we would feel safer, knowing that everybody else had to do the same thing. But because this disease has been so politicized, and because this thing about I have a right not to do certain things, without the concomitant dialogue about, well, I guess I also have certain responsibilities, it's not equally weighed. Until we overcome the political goo that has infected the pandemic, it's going to be very hard, because just as a matter of principle, a good portion of this country, a significant portion of this country, and a lot of folks here in Florida are saying, you can't make me do it. I'm not going to let you make me do it. And if you do, you're violating my personal rights. You're discriminating against me. The governor has said in his executive order in Florida, you can't do it. The state cannot participate in any way, shape, or form in creating or validating or participating with others in creating a vaccine passport. No state agency can. And no venue can require that a person show a passport, because if they do, they will be they'll be violating HIPAA, and they will be discriminating against that individual. And if there's any state money, directly or indirectly, that might otherwise go to that individual's business, it will be cut off. And if I were a venue, a small bar or a large bar or a stadium, and say, you know, am I going to fight this? Am I going to say I'm going to demand a passport, of which there is none right now, other than the CDC card? And even if I do that, say, well, show me your CDC card to get in. And you and I show our CDC card, but then there's a person behind us who says, you know something? I think this is a bad thing. I'm going to try to get in. I don't have a CDC card. And when they deny me admission, I'm going to sue them. And guess who's going to join me in the suit? The governor and the legislature and the attorney general of the state of Florida are going to join me against that venue, and it's going to cost that venue hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend themselves against a discrimination action. They might win in the end based on public health principles. In the meantime, it's going to be a rough fight.
Wow. That's so well described by you. I'm very deeply swayed by that. I'm serious. I've been trying to think this thing through. I'll probably write an op-ed about it, and I'll probably quote you. Let me deepen this a little bit, Jay. What about being really fair here and saying, let's add immunity cards to this? In other words, talk about discrimination. Aren't we discriminating against people who had COVID, who got over COVID, who made antibodies to COVID, who have neutralizing antibodies to COVID? Why shouldn't that group be tested? And why shouldn't they gain entrance if they can show some kind of immunity?
Well, I don't disagree. From a public health practice and policy perspective, I think it's a great idea. If you've been exposed, if you've developed immunity, you should be able to demonstrate that you're relatively safe, even though we really don't know how long that immunity might be conferred. We still don't know that, as you know. It could be 3 months. It could be 20 years. We just don't have enough longitudinal data. It gets back to the venue. But again, if you come to my house, Mark, you come down to Florida tomorrow. I'm going to say, Mark, I love you. You're a great kind of friend. Can you show me that you've gotten your shot? I'm going to tell you that before you come, so you can pop out your CDC card and say, Mark, welcome into my house. You know, I can do that as a private citizen in my house. And even though, according to the Supreme Court, corporations are persons, they are not treated the same way as individuals, and they don't have the same prerogatives as individuals. So that if you and I own a bar or a restaurant, and we say, you know something, this is our house, and we're deciding that nobody comes in here unless they can prove to us, A, that they're 18 years of age or older, which is the law, okay, and secondly, that they've had their vaccine or that they've had conferred immunity. And there has to be some way of doing that. Now, if I do that, and with the current executive order in Florida, and perhaps just in common law around the country, if somebody is denied admission to our corporate house, they would try, again, with the support of some politicians and lawyers, to sue us for discrimination based on personal health information that we have no authorization to get from them. And, you know, then we're stuck. And that's the sword that's being hung over us. You can do it. We can try it. We can say, we're going to create a safe place. And we want only people who've been vaccinated to feel comfortable coming here. And to get in the door, you have to show your card. Well, I've got a guy who has a thing up the street from me. It's a large venue. And he called me yesterday. And he said, Jay, I want to be able to honor the teachers and the healthcare workers in Hillsborough and Pasco County, Florida, who've done such a great job. And I've got this beautiful spread, and I'm going to put together a night for them. I'm going to hire a band, and I'm going to serve some food. But I'm going to ask that they validate that they have been vaccinated. He said, I know I can't require it, but I'm going to count on their good faith and their personal responsibility. That may be about as far as you can go, hoping that nobody's going to come in intentionally, knowing that they're positive, and coughing all over everybody. Until there is some legal determination by a state or by the federal government that there's a public health compelling reason to be able to demonstrate that people are vaccinated so that they can travel within the United States and so that they can go into public venues safely for themselves and others, it's an open question.
So I have a great question here from Beth Amin, our program director extraordinaire, and she points out something really sensitive, which is not only is what you're saying compelling, but, you know, once you start trying to compel people to enforce this thing, you're going to end up with nasty confrontations between low-paid workers and citizens, like we saw with masks, right? You know, you don't follow this mask mandate. What's going to happen to you? Somebody hauls you away? I mean, it's seriously, it could lead to real personal confrontations, right?
It can. You know, we've even seen people getting shot and stabbed in stores over the mask issue. And there's such volatility over the beliefs concerning the vaccine. I wouldn't be surprised. And it's not just the clinical differences. I mean, there are people who are so politically stuck in the vaccine being, even if it works, being against my rights, that I will not take it intentionally just to prove that I can exert that liberty and that freedom. But we always forget, and Mark, you and I have talked about this since we've met, and we've talked about it on your program, that we both are firmly ensconced in the Constitution, and we believe in rights, that we have rights, and we have things that we can do, but we oftentimes don't place those next to the responsibilities, the social responsibilities, the clinical responsibilities, the public health responsibilities. I think that we've gotten to a point in our country and our culture where the rights are presumed, but the responsibilities are neglected.
Jay, let's get back to the word incentive, because you responded semi-legally to it, which is what I wanted. But I want to ask you now, how can we use what the vaccine gets you to convince people who are on the fence to get it? And by the way, your point about side effects is real, except my response to that is usually, well, you know, vaccines throughout history, and no, this is not a new vaccine. We've been studying the mRNA vaccine since the 1990s, and vaccines through history you usually see the side effects you're going to see in the first couple of days, and not enough people are messaging properly that the mRNA is out of your system in a day or two. So we're not expecting any long-term side effects. But what can we do to make people take this vaccine who are on the fence? And when I say the word incentive, I don't only mean legally. I'm talking about, what does it buy you?
Well, for those people who've gotten it, and I've spoken with a lot of folks, even folks who were vaccine hesitants prior to that, they felt a sudden peace of mind. And it wasn't just saying that I'm a good citizen now, I'm doing my part, saying I feel protected. I sure hope I'm protected. We all kind of hope we're protected. And we believe that the science behind the development of the vaccine is pretty darn good. So getting that message out is important. And a lot of this is, you know, social messaging at the community level, going into the churches, going into the mosques, going into the synagogues, going into the community programs, working with local business leaders. And the biggest part, I mean, golly, Mark, you know, if some of the distinguished politicians who have appeared, perhaps, to be less than enthusiastic about encouraging vaccination would say, you know something, folks, this really is a good idea, and it's not about politics. It's about all of us being able to go to the baseball game and sitting together, everybody being able to come to my house and enjoy a dinner without worrying whether I knew you or not. That social messaging, and it goes beyond just social responsibility, but what he provides as an incentive, what works best as an incentive in this great country? Money. So if we can say, look, as a private entity, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say everybody who gets a vaccine gets a gift card. We do that in healthcare programs all the time. I know that you do that at NYU with a lot of the community-based programs. My community AIDS programs, we give gift cards to people when they come in for their service. When they get their test, they get a $10 gift card or a $5 gift card. Those little things make a difference. Maybe that can work. It's a combination of things, Mark.
A couple of things I want to say is NYU is steeped in a culture of pro-vaccine, that we give hats off to Dr. Elizabeth Cohen for that, who's one of our ophthalmologists. She's a Dean Grossman's wife. She has been an unbelievable vaccine advocate, where our flu vaccines are required here. So you can imagine how many people are taking the COVID vaccine. We've given it out to well over 100,000 people. So there's a culture of vaccine use. By the way, Beth Amin does say that you get a Krispy Kreme donut for taking this vaccine, and I wouldn't sell that short. I have to tell you, those things are so delicious. Forget about diets. The Krispy Kreme donuts. Great value, and they're not even. They're not even a sponsor of this show, and I'm giving a shout out to that Krispy Kreme with the Bavarian one or the frosting on top. I mean, I don't think you can get it anywhere in this neighborhood anymore. Everything's closed. But speaking of which,
they've got them down here in Florida. You know, this is home of Krispy Kreme down here, I think. And you can always see the flashing sign that says "Hot donuts are just coming out."
So, realistically, the economy is hurting, and those that would really be impacted by the COVID vaccine passports are so desperate to recover financially. You know, I see both sides of that point. Like, in other words, let's look at it from the business point of view. Don't they want the vaccine passports to get people back on their plane?
Yes, they do. Though I must say, the reports from the last few weeks are that almost all flights are pretty full. folks, now that they can't fly, are flying. My colleagues even going from the East Coast to the West Coast for personal business. So we're surprised that all of the seats were taken. And I understand that Delta is removing the exception on the center seat now, and they're filling it. You know, whether you feel very comfortable about it or not, at least you would like to think that the person next to you tested negative before they got on the plane. You know, you could certainly say, you got to ask them if they'll show you their card. They may not. But we should be proud of it. We should, you know, say, look, I'm doing my part to make the economy work. Because the more of us who get vaccinated and can prove it, the more people will feel comfortable going and doing more things, going to hotels, going even back on cruises, flying more, enjoying entertainment venues. That's what it's going to take to make everybody feel more comfortable, except those people who are either politically inclined to say, I don't care what you're telling me, you can't make me do anything, and those people who really don't believe in the vaccine. And that's a small percentage of the population.
Well, it's 17%, and let's hope it's smaller the next time Kaiser Family Foundation does that poll. We've got to keep shrinking it all the time. I will give a little clue to one thing, Jay, and then I'll ask your final thoughts. Maybe I'm a little paranoid about COVID, but I mean, I was fully vaccinated months ago. I was one of the first to get it here. I got it on TV, and I also filmed the vaccines arriving to NYU, the first vaccines, and I have this vaccine since the end of December. But here's my policy in the office. If I go into one of my small exam rooms with a patient that hasn't been vaccinated, I still wear a mask and shield. If I go into an exam room with a patient that has been vaccinated, I just wear the mask and I let them come into my consult room with me and I sit and schmooze with them. Why the difference? Not because I'm paranoid to think I can still get COVID with the vaccine. I think the numbers are really very small, but I'm not totally convinced yet that I couldn't carry it. And I don't want to be somebody that could be transiently having it and passing it along. I know that we think less and less that that's the case, but I'm trying to show you in my own world how I differentiate someone who's vaccinated and someone who isn't. Thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm always proud of the things you tell me you do, because you are a wonderfully responsible and competent clinician as well as a citizen. And, you know, we've been talking the last couple of months just down in Florida. You know, people think, I got the vaccine, I'm fixed, nothing can harm me. And people don't remember, they don't know, that a vaccine doesn't prevent you from getting disease. It makes it less likely you're going to get sick from it. And it's still possible that you could have a mild reaction if you're exposed, but you're less likely to get really sick and die. And you might also still be able to carry it and give it to others. So in your case, if you know somebody's been vaccinated, the shield is not that important, because there's an extra bubble that you're in with that person. If they haven't been vaccinated, you put the shield on because you may not want to give it to them. That's your being a responsible physician and citizen.
Finally, Jay, before you go, we got an email from Jana. It may be legal, but is it ethical for a dental office to refuse to tell patients whether the dental staff is vaccinated? I understand privacy laws. However, I feel that I have a right to know if someone has their face in my open mouth, whether it's a, I'm adding to this, whether it's a vaccinated face.
Yeah, I have private physician and dental clients throughout Florida, and that's come up. And you can't require it. If the patient says, I need to know, you can say, well, you know, this is a policy. I can't divulge personal health information about anybody unless everybody in the office agrees that we're going to attest that we have all been vaccinated, and I know it as the clinical director, and I'm going to advertise my clinic, my dental office, as being vaccinated. You know, they can't stop me from doing that. That's positive information. How are you going to prove it? That's another story.
Great point and great way to go forward. Dr. Jay Wolfson, Distinguished Service Professor, Public Health Medicine and Pharmacy, Senior Associate Dean, Morsani College of Medicine, Associate Vice President of the University of South Florida Health. At the University of South Florida, one of our favorite guests, bailed us out during a hurricane once. He's just an incredible, incredible scholar and public health expert and attorney, and does a lot of great good in the world. Jay, thank you for joining us again.
Mark, it's always a privilege. Continue, please, to be safe and be well.
Get facts, not fear, from SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, presented by the leading experts from NYU Langone Health. To learn more about Dr. Radio, including shows and schedules, go to SiriusXM.com/Dr. Radio.